Every week, Jonathan de Burka Butler brings us news from around the world that sometimes doesn't hit our headlines. Anyway, Jonathan de Burka Butler joins us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting
on? Right, we're going to go to India first. And Pakistan has fears over India's new flag.
Yes, it's a new flag that is 110 metres high. That's the flagpole. Flag itself is about 40 metres in length and 26 metres in width. So it's a big flag. But I think more than anything, it's where they've put it is the problem. Now, previously, the tallest or the highest flag in India was about 100 metres, but it was down in the south east of the country, closer to Bangladesh. It was in a place called Jakaraland. But this one is in Punjab, and it's 200 metres away from the border with Pakistan. So at a wild guess here, you would say that they're placing the flagpole here to deliberately antagonise Pakistan. And I had to include the story because I think it's indicative of how sort of pathetic and how pathetic they can both be towards each other, both sides, it should be said.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes the interpretation of it can be a little bit against the Pakistanis as opposed to the Indians. But anyway, that's just my slant on it. But this is what they've done anyway. Now, this is 200 metres, as I said, away from the border. And if you're in Lahore, which is a very big city in Pakistan, you can see this. So they've put it, you know, within, you know, visible distance of a very populated area. So they're also, they have security concerns about it. They say that, you know, hidden cameras could be put into it. So they suspect spying could be going on. But I think the main thing is that it's just so
it's just the effrontery of it, really, more because I assume India would have lots of different ways of spying in Pakistan. They would have access to an old satellite or two.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Probably more useful. We're going to go to Uzbekistan now. There's a nursery school scandal.
Yeah, this is in a province that's to the north of Afghanistan. So it's in Uzbekistan, but down in the southeast of the country, Surkandraha. And it's a private nursery, I believe, in Uzbekistan. And back in November of 2016, there was CCTV footage which was exposed and basically showed that the people who were supposed to be looking after the children in this particular creche were, you know, threatening them basically and being quite violent towards them. Now, the cameras, I should explain that the cameras were put in there originally because there was allegations that it was moonlighting as a brothel at night time, okay? And the authorities actually did capture footage of this, and you can actually see it. It's online. But while they were looking into that, they discovered that some of the carers were, as I said, quite threatening towards children. In one instance, you can see there's footage of a woman waving a knife in front of a child, and she threatens to cut his tongue out.
Good God.
Basically saying that the child has been ratting on them to her, to his father, which he, of course, the poor child denied. So anyway, it's taken a while for this reports about this to come out, and we've recently discovered that about 20 people have been arrested, but 5 people have been charged. So 2 preschool teachers and 2 guards have been sentenced to 3 years each, and then there's another teacher who's been sentenced to 2 years. So they're cracking down on it anyway, and it's caused a bit of a scandal.
Was this
apparently
a private place, or is it state run?
I'm not 100% sure, and actually I did say at the beginning it was private, but I'm mixing it up. I think I might be mixing it up with the next story, which you'll see in a minute. So anyway, I'm not sure if it's private or state run, but either way, it's fairly scandalous.
God save us tonight. Now, anyone complained about childcare in this country? That's just a story especially for you. PNG, we're going to now, and they have a programme to train women to be candidates for Parliament.
Yes, I wasn't sure about this particular story, whether it was a great story or whether it was just a little bit patronising on one side as well. But when you consider that there are only three female MPs out of 111 parliamentarians in Papua New Guinea, I suppose it's a good thing. So what they've done here is that it was a thing that was developed by the United Nations Development Programme, and they got funding from New Zealand and Italy and various different people as well. And what they did was they asked women to come before a committee and put themselves forward for election. So there's elections taking place in Papua New Guinea at the end of June and early July. And 50 of the women who brought themselves forward are going to go into a training program this week in the parliament to find out what it's like being in parliament and how to conduct themselves should they get elected. Now, I think really what it was trying to do was try to encourage women to get more involved in politics. And hopefully it'll have that effect. But it is a story I will go back to later, I think, and we'll see how many more female MPs have actually when it ends in July.
I suppose it'll be a factor of how the voters will react to that, given that there are only three women in Parliament as it is. How many in total members of Parliament are
111.
There? 111. Yeah, so and there's tiny proportion.
Yeah, it's very fragmented sort of a place as well. There's 18 different parties. I think there's 6 parties in government. But I think it says a lot more about the status of women within Papua New Guinea. I was looking at other statistics from Human Rights Watch, and they estimate that about 70% of women there have been subjected to some sort of violence against them. So there's an underlying issue there as well,
yes,
which they're trying to bring to the fore through this program, I think.
Yeah, okay. Well, you could see it as a laudable thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
We have, you know, we tried to have quotas, which kind of sort of worked. Right, Colombia. An activist has been killed in Colombia, you know, which indicates that even though that there was a peace deal there, it's not entirely peaceful.
Yeah, and this was the thing that stood out for me. I mean, we all know that FARC are handing in their weapons at the moment. There's a peace deal there. But as they're moving out, Colombian soldiers aren't moving in, at least not quickly enough. So there's a vacuum there. So it means that you've got various different paramilitaries. Now, reports are saying that they're right-wing paramilitaries, but my suspicion is that they could be a mixture of right-wing paramilitaries, they could be gangs, and there could be also renegade FARC people there who are taking advantage of the situation. But anyway, a lady by the name of Alicia Lopez Guisao was killed last week, last Thursday, in the broad daylight at 8:45 in the morning. She was going about her shopping in a very populated city, Medellin. It's to the northwest, 2.5 million people in it. And two guys come into the shop and they shoot her dead. Now, she, according to a report that was released the next day, is one of 120 victims in the last 14 months, who are active in human rights and that kind of area. So there was a report, as I said, released the next day by a group called Defense of the People, who look after this kind of thing. And they say that there's been something of an upsurge in violence against human rights activists in that part of the world.
Well, is there any indication of who might have wanted her dead?
Well, indeed. I mean, we do know from other reports that the government are denying this. They're saying that there's no such thing as right-wing paramilitaries that exist anymore because they were all disbanded.
Yes,
because, of course, back in the day when the government were fighting FARC, the government were bankrolling these right-wing paramilitaries. So they're just saying they're gangs. Okay?
Okay.
Those who miss FARC and wouldn't mind seeing them kind of back there in some capacity fairly quickly would suggest that it's right-wing paramilitaries. Whatever they're trying to do is they're trying to take land. These people are trying to take land off indigenous tribes who've been fighting for decades to get access to land because there's coca there. And they want to exploit that to make various different things that you make out of it.
To make cocaine for the most part.
So the people who are trying to stand up for the rights of indigenous tribes in the area are a problem for these guys.
Right. And whilst that vacuum is there and the state forces haven't moved in, that'll keep going. Zambia, people killed in a stampede for food.
Yeah, this was at a church, an outreach program. So this happened in the capital of Lusaka. It was at the Church of Christ Olympic Youth Development Centre. And it happened on Sunday, March the 5th. So basically, about 35,000 people had gathered at this outreach gathering, and they had been told previously that there was going to be food packages waiting there for them, and it just got overcrowded, and when the food started was being handed out, there was a surge forward and a lot of people were injured. 8 people died, 6 of them women and three young men, I believe. Very sad, but it's, I think, again, if you look at the way that it was done, this was a church organisation who, I think, without wishing to be too subjective about it, were enticing people with food. This was advertised. You know, there was a suggestion by someone who was critical of this that perhaps they should have waited to tell people about the food until after people had gathered for prayer.
Yeah.
This was why there was so many people at it. And in a country where you've got, you know, 60% of the population are below the poverty line, you're going to have problems when you're promising handing out food.
Yeah, it does indicate that the levels of poverty and of just raw hunger seem to be quite extreme.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, right, Kuwait we're going to next. And there's a crackdown on workers who aren't working.
Yes, this is in the public service, and this is they're going to prosecute 38 state employees for bunking off work. They've had a bit of a problem with this over the years, and in order to deal with that particular problem, they brought in a system where you have to, you know, place your finger in something that monitors your fingerprints, and it also takes a photo of you. The problem was that these employees were handing silicone fingertips to colleagues of theirs, and they were saying, go into work there and put in the fingertips, but the colleagues weren't putting their face in front of the camera. So the authorities began to notice this, that there was fingerprints, but that there wasn't photographs, and they began to investigate this. So what they've done is they've opened this, as I said, open investigation, and they're going to prosecute 38 state employees. Now, they did have a similar problem, I think, last year or earlier this year, and about 900 employees had their salaries stopped. So they're as I said, they're cracking down on this, but it doesn't appear to be working if people are trying to get away with it.
And these are Kuwaitis. These are state jobs they have. They're not guest workers or anything.
Yeah. Because apparently most of the private enterprises is foreign workers. So Kuwaitis sort of choose to work in the public sector because apparently it's very easy.
Yeah.
But absenteeism is a major problem there.
Okay, all right. So what things should we look out for in the coming week?
Yeah, I think the big story next week one of the big stories will be Netanyahu is going to meet Putin in Moscow on Thursday. And he's been quite overt in saying that he's going to talk to him about the presence of Iran in Syria. He basically wants guarantees that when this whole thing ends in Syria, that he wants the Iranians out. He thinks that the Iranians plan to stay there for a while and from there, you know, do bad things to Israel, as a certain person might put it.
It should be a jolly meeting.
So also on Thursday, we've been covering this scandal in South Korea involving the former prime minister there. But the former group leader of Samsung, J.Y. Lee, is going to go on trial for bribery and embezzlement on Thursday as well. And that promises to be an ongoing scandal in South Korea as well. And then later in the week, I think Jeff Bezos, he of Amazon fame, I think, he's going to announce plans for getting us all into space. I think he's big into flying shuttles into space and that kind of thing. So he's going to tell us how we're all going to get there.
Oh, fantastic news.
More from around the world on Moncrief every Tuesday from 2:40.